This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Doug Brashear. He is a mobile practice director and senior information architect at Navigation Arts. Good morning, Doug. How are you today?
Good, John. Thanks for having me.
Geez, you know, you take the metro, you walk down the street, everyone's got some kind of a smartphone, a tablet device, and a lot of my listeners are federal IT professionals, and they're charged with managing these devices, and they have some questions, use HTML5, iOS, Android, what's the best practice for this, what's the best practice for that? How do the people like Doug, who earn a living 8 hours a day doing this, how does he answer some of these questions, and what's his perspective on it? And to tell you the truth, that's why we brought you in here. Sometimes I'll get these big high-level people, and we'll talk about the cloud. And just, I want to go a deep dive here and maybe talk about mobile devices and some practical aspects of using mobile devices and maybe managing them. But before we begin, maybe you can give our listeners your background and tell us maybe a thumbnail sketch about Navigation Arts, please.
Great. I'm Doug Brashear. I sort of made my living for years as a senior information architect, you know, someone who deals with requirements gathering and user research and kind of visualization of interfaces that people will use every day. I've been at Navigation Arts for 7 years now, and essentially Navigation Arts is an interactive agency based in Tysons Corner. You know, we focus on web application and mobile design and development. And basically our goal is just to help businesses achieve a competitive edge through well-tuned user interfaces. And we also help agencies and membership organizations just help to serve their constituents, their citizens, the general public, and, you know, their members better through effective online experiences. And when I say online, I'm talking about any connected screen that they might have, a desktop, a laptop, a tablet, a smartphone, and maybe a screen we haven't yet even envisioned.
Yeah. There is a rumor that you also are a guest lecturer at Georgetown University. Is there any truth to that rumor?
There is quite a bit of truth to that rumor.
Doug was in my class last fall, and, he got up there, and the class was just listening to every single word. I got really good feedback on it because, you know, finally, this isn't a guy writing a magazine article about it. This isn't a guy, you know, pontificating on the radio about it. This is a guy who's getting his hands dirty every single day working with end users and trying to figure out the best way to use these smartphones, to use an iPad, to accomplish the task of the agency, your enterprise, your organization. So I just think it's good, practical information. I want to start off with one of my favorite acronyms, and the acronym is BYOD. And some people say that's bring your own device, bring your own disaster. There's all kinds of ways to figure it out. I mean, this is a problem that my listeners have. I mean, should their agency have a policy? Should they say only Apple products, only Android products? Or should they take the burden? Oh, no, bring in any conceivable mobile device, portable. We'll support them all for free. I mean, it's not a black and white. I don't know if it's a difficult decision for my listeners, isn't it?
I mean, I think whenever you pose this question to me, I started to think about, you know, what's the historical perspective here? So, you know, if you think years and years ago, you know, when people were just getting issued computers at work, you know, that was probably the only computer that they were going to interact with. And they were probably very happy to have that. And maybe if they were lucky, they had a BlackBerry or some other connected device. And that was perfectly fine. And they carried around one device and one laptop. And they were fine using that. I think now, you know, people actually own these devices, you know, personally. You know, they've gone out and they've bought and they've done the research. And they utilize these devices every day at home. And, you know, these are, and they've become more attached to them. You know, these are the devices that if they could, they would choose to use at work every day because they want to be as effective at work as they can and are with these devices in their personal lives.
I can remember, I'm a lot older than you, I can remember years ago when people would would have personal computers at home. They actually used to make them. They'd make them personal computers mm-hmm. and strange devices, TRS-80s. And then and weirdos like me would drag them to the office, and they'd use spreadsheets. And people would go, whoa, we don't have to cable down to the IBM at the end of the corridor. And so I see parallels there. I see, you know, all of mm-hmm. a sudden now we have a 24-year-old kid getting out of college. They live in a mobile world, and they are very productive using mobile devices. So they drag them to the office. And, you know, if it adds their productivity, I don't know how a manager can tell them no.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I feel the same way. You know, being kind of a dedicated user of these devices and trying to help organizations, you know, serve their customers better through these devices, you know, I feel exactly the same way. But I can really see it from the enterprise or from the agency standpoint. You know, there are so many devices these days, and with certain types of devices like Android devices, there are so many differences in the characteristics that kind of make up the device, whether it's connection speed or screen size or the presence or lack of a hardware keyboard, or just kind of the processing capabilities of the device. And, you know, it can be really daunting to try to support these things. And you have your employees who are now, in a lot of cases, really emotionally sort of involved with their devices. And they want to be able to use this thing at work. And, you know, if they can't use them, the thing they absolutely don't want is someone telling them they can't bring this into the workplace.
Yeah, I'll say. There's a company called Meritalk. They do surveys. They did a survey at the end of last year. And they surveyed 152 federal CIOs. Looks like two-thirds of them are using or assessing the use of mobile applications. Right there. You know, they didn't ask about the devices. They asked about the applications. Yep. Kind of an interesting yep. focus. It's not how much RAM do you have, what kind of screen do you have, is what can you do with it. It's a mind shift from several years ago.
It totally is. I think thinking about it from that point of view helps you better frame your argument. You know, for example, by saying that they're considering the use of mobile applications, you know, that's like saying, I want to empower my workforce, or I want to serve my customers better. And that's a much easier value proposition to make than to say, well, it's just more convenient for me to bring the device I already have.
Yeah, that's not good. In the commercial world, you know, my listeners, a lot of times they worked in agencies and they beat themselves up and they go, oh, woe is me. We're behind the eight ball. We're not as advanced as the other, you know, the commercial people are. But, you know, if you find out what's going on in the commercial world, for example, BizTech Magazine did a survey, another survey, and they found out that only 43% of companies have rolled out any kind of security strategy for their mobile devices. Now, this is one obvious area where I think every federal listener is ahead of the commercial world, just in the area of security. And this just, you know, the security questions, just the first of like 50 questions to ask when you look at some kind of a mobile strategy for your agency, isn't it?
Yep. I mean, you know, you think about the intellectual property and the data security concerns that every major brand has, you know, these commercial entities. And, you know, the only risk that they have is possibly losing a competitive edge or compromising some internal data. You know, these are big concerns, but they sort of pale in comparison to the thought of compromising national security or something like that. So, I mean, I think, you know, the concerns or the caution on the part of a federal agency considering, you know, mobile deployment, you know, they're very warranted. I mean, there are very real risks. And especially when you think about, you know, the fact that you might not always be dealing with kind of a known quantity. For example, you know, iOS, you know, the operating system that iPads and iPhones and other devices run on, you know, it's known to be, you know, one of the more secure mobile operating systems out there. But there's a group of savvy people out there who can jailbreak their phone. And that basically means that, you know, instead of only being able to install applications from Apple's App Store or perhaps, you know, some lower quantity enterprise distributions, that you might be able to install applications from other sources. And the reason why that's a risk is because, you know, one of the things that Apple does really nicely, you know, love it or hate it, they spend some time reviewing your app submissions, and they will most certainly reject them if they don't like what you're doing with personal data, if they don't like the way you're transmitting that data back and forth.
We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'd like to maybe toss this question out to you about whether a large organization, whether it's an agency, whether it's a private company, should create mobile websites or if they should use native mobile apps. I think this is a great debate, and I think people would like to hear your perspective on it. I sure would. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Doug Prashear, Mobile Practice Director and Senior Information Architect at Navigation Arts.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
These days, federal agencies are exploring how to be more efficient, from cutting hidden costs to operating differently. Turn to Deloitte. We blend public sector experience and private sector insights to help defense and civilian agencies rethink, reduce, and restructure, all while strengthening your mission so you can stretch budgets more and your staff less. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. We help government help America.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
I'm Kurt Kraus, General Manager of the National Conference Center in Leesburg, Virginia. Recent overspending by the GSA has triggered drastic meeting and travel restrictions that are short-sighted. The fact is, most government departments spend sensibly. Training is critical for every organization's success, including the government and our military. These sweeping changes will negatively impact our industry and the economy. See my letter in the Washington Post advocating long-term solutions, not short-sighted reactions. And for responsible meeting options, visit conferencecenter.com.
Paid for by the National Conference Center.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal, civilian, and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A, provided by RSA, the security division of EMC. The guest is Patrick Carey, director of RSA Incident Response. What's the biggest security issue organizations face today?
Advanced threats. Most security teams aren't well prepared to address them. Traditional security, typically perimeter-focused and signature-based, has no chance. This is what many enterprises still rely on.
What should they do?
Look into RSA NetWitness for real visibility combined with actionable intelligence to combat advanced threats.
Find out more at RSA.com.
Join the Northern Virginia chapter of AFSEA for their annual Spring Mentor Protégé Night, Thursday, June 14th at Maggiano's in Tyson's Corner. If you're under 40, in the beginning or mid-level of your career, you won't want to miss this opportunity. The opportunity to connect with seasoned professionals who are happy to share their ideas, past experiences, and their advice. That's sure to help you reach your professional goals. For more information and to register, visit afseanova.org.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Doug Brashear. He's a mobile practice director and senior information architect at a company called Navigation Arts. That's an easy website to remember. Navigation Arts. I don't have to spell out anything, do I?
I wish it were easier.
You know, I was looking at your title, mobile practice director. Boy, 10 years ago, there were no stinking mobile practice directors.
Absolutely.
What was mobile? Mobile was going to someone else's office using their phone somewhere. It's the world is changing so quickly. Before the break, we talked about some choices that some of my listeners have to make, or at least vote on or participate in deciding on. And one choice is, do you use a mobile website, or do you want to design a mobile app? And there's strengths and weaknesses to both, aren't there?
Yep. I mean, I think for a lot of the clients that we end up working with, it's a slightly easier decision because a lot of them don't have any mobile presence whatsoever. So, you know, we're talking to them about their first foray into kind of mobile customer servicing or mobile member servicing or what have you. And so, you know, my recommendation there almost always is, you know, let's talk about a mobile website, you know, because this is the communication vehicle that's going to help you reach the largest number of devices, the largest number of mobile users. It can be made so that it adapts very nicely based on the different dimensions of the browser window and the different screen resolutions and such. You know, it's a bit like trying to develop something for every computer that's ever been able to access the internet. There are a lot of variations and everything, but there's a lot of good frameworks and, you know, we have a lot of talented people that help us understand what we need to do to accommodate all these different devices.
That's a good, reasonable, selection. In the commercial world, if you design to, write an app, that ain't cheap. I mean, that can be very expensive to have that done. Although it's real trendy to say, oh, I'm working on an app for this, there's an app for that and everything else. Well, I think you have to be very wary and just sit back and say, well, you know, a brand new Lexus is a great car, but that's $60,000. I mean, you know, can you justify it, you know? And I don't know if you can justify it. Some obviously you can, some you can't. Let me ask about these native apps. I've been reading more and more that in agencies and organizations that do go down the other path, they do write apps, a lot of times the apps are written for the employees, not written for necessarily people outside the organization. For example, the TSA has got a little app for their, you know, the workers at the airports, and the app is, can I bring this on? And all of a sudden, it makes them more productive because rather than going to the computer and searching out and wondering if they could bring, I don't know, shampoo or whatever, they have it right there, making it more productive. So this may be a small justification for designing an app, but they're not that many, are there? I don't know.
I mean, I think there's huge benefits for, you know, deploying internally, you know, to facilitate communication with your employees, to make information easier to access, especially if it's kind of core information that's really critical to their jobs. You know, we've worked with some clients in the past where kind of a really rapid notification of particular types of events. For example, we've done some work in the construction space where weather can play a really important role. So, for example, if there was a particular weather system that was headed for the area, you know, they could alert their different projects teams to say, hey, you know, you might want to get things a little buttoned down tonight. We're expecting high winds or what have you. Or if there were other things that the project team needed to know about. So, you know, that's just one case of where, you know, just that rapid communication capability of the mobile device, the fact that you have it with you almost all the time when it's pretty unlikely that you have your laptop tucked into your back pocket.
The TSA is perfect. I mean, if someone is sitting in Dulles Airport looking at people coming in, all of a sudden there's a new threat that no one can imagine. Mm-hmm. You can deploy an announcement quicker than you can, you know, what are you going to send out email?
Exactly. And even if one person on that team, you know, the team, you know, manning the desk or the checkpoints, even if one person sees it, they can go and talk to their friends, you know, their colleagues, you know, they can communicate that message really quickly. And all of a sudden you've got this instantly aware team that can now react from that moment. And I mean, I think we all realize that, you know, threats like that, you know, you're not going to have a ton of lead time. You know, you may just find out about it, perhaps, you know, God forbid, you know, minutes before that threat is active. So, you know, that instant notification is really important. You know, being able to reach people where they are is really important. And, you know, in general, I've seen a lot of studies lately that basically say that there's a whole segment of the population, you know, thinking about how you service customers and constituents, you know, there's a whole segment of the population that doesn't have a computer at home. You know, that mobile device is really their main or their only access to the internet. So the extent to which you can, you know, make these services available via mobile, you know, you're probably reducing your own costs, you know, for answering phones or maintaining call centers or mailing out things that people might be able to download. You're also serving these customers better because, you know, they can do something in a self-service manner. They can get it when they want. They don't have to worry about calling between 9 and 5. It's just more convenient for them as well.
The thing about the TSA folks that are out there working 24 hours a day and being concerned about threats. There was that woman who's on the airplane a few weeks back, and she said she had a mobile, you know, some kind of device implanted in her body or something. I mean, these are crazy things that happen, and I don't even know how else you can do it besides by having some kind of a special app for that. InfoTrends did a survey last year, And they showed that of all the apps that were designed, 51% were designed for their employees, not for people outside. Although, I guess, if I'm walking down the street, someone talking, I'm thinking about running an app to go to Dunkin' Donuts or see where the local movie is or something. But it's internal more than external, which I think is the industry is maturing and people are actually looking at the practical aspects of this.
I mean, I think if you have a highly mobile workforce, there's just no better way than kind of equipping them with some device that's just uniquely tailored to be carried around. So, for example, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean small screen, but if you have a tablet device and that tablet device has GPS capability and a cellular modem built in or something like that, you know, it's basically performing all the same functions or a lot of the same functions as a larger screen laptop or even your desktop sitting at your desk. But it's got these other things that just make it really great for use kind of out in the field. I think that, in some cases, they're even better just for from an ergonomic standpoint, too. They're lighter, they're more compact. You know, some of the things you can just slip into your pocket. You know, it's almost like it's the laptop that we wanted back when we invented laptops.
Interesting. We had Vivek Kundra in the studio here a couple weeks back. He, of course, talked about Cloud First. And his replacements talked about shared first. I think the next guy is going to say, well, mobile first. I think it's going to be the whole transition here. So if you're, Doug, let's say you're working for a federal agency and you're scratching your head trying to be more efficient. What would kind of a decision tree or what kind of factors would you use in deciding between a mobile website and a native app? And if a native app, whether it's Apple, whether it's Android, or Windows even. I mean, what would your logic, how would you set up the decision?
I mean, I think first off, I'd say, you know, am I servicing my customers in any way from a mobile standpoint already? I think if no, then, you know, probably you're heading down a path that's going to point you to a mobile website. Unless there are some features that, you know, for which a native application is really the only way to achieve these features. I think that there are certain advantages to having apps be in the App Store. So, for example, I think a lot of organizations end up forgetting that just building the mobile solution is only part of the task. You have to, you know, figure out your promotion strategy, your marketing strategy, your enterprise deployment strategy.
Wait a minute. Build it and they will come, right? that's the wrong movie. I'm sorry.
I wish that were the case. I've seen some really savvy marketing programs, particularly at one of my client sites. You know, there's a gentleman there who just did a fantastic job, you know, developing this multifaceted promotion strategy. But, you know, this is something that a lot of organizations overlook, and they don't realize that, your social media, your properties, your website, you know, any newspaper, media that you put out or traditional media, you know, these can all be things that help drive people to this solution that's going to perform self-servicing capabilities. I'm totally getting off the question though. So I think that if you have the need for these really complex interactions, then maybe you are thinking about a mobile application. Or if you have a particular branded service or a particular set of services that people really think of you for example, the U.S. Postal Service comes to mind. I actually use the U.S. Postal Service application quite a bit. It's great for determining and calculating postage rates and things like that. And it's just perfect. You know, I don't have to go to a website. I can actually calculate this stuff while I'm standing in line. It can help me understand what forms I need for the way I want to send a particular package. I think it's a perfect example of, you know, giving people just what they need, where they need it, and how they need it.
I have three kids in their 20s. I don't know if they know what a post office is. They think that exists. They don't know what a television is or a post office. So I think it's a big change in technology. When we come back, we'll talk about iOS versus Android and the enterprise and talk about navigation arts and ways to learn more about mobile technology. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Doug Brashear, Mobile Practice Director and Senior Information Architect at Navigation Arts.
G.G. Shum, VP and GM of Symantec's public sector, commented during Protecting and Securing Your Data in a Virtual World.
If you think about security in the past, it was about protecting a physical infrastructure, whether that be a perimeter, whether that be systems themselves, whether that be your network. And in this new, highly virtualized, cloud-first world, really it's more about protecting the information.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword virtual.
The right virtualization strategy can take you from static infrastructure silos to an automated high-density cloud that transforms IT service delivery. And the path goes straight through business-critical virtualization. Symantec has the backup, recovery, and security solutions you need to protect your virtualized environment with confidence. For the top 10 tips on protecting a virtualized environment, visit www.virtualbackupplan.com. Symantec, confidence in a connected world.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Federally employed women, FEW, the organization of choice for leadership, equity, and the advancement of women, would like to extend an invitation to FEW's 43rd National Training Program, NTP, Wheels of Change Keep on Moving, in Detroit, Michigan, July 16 through 20. The NTP is the largest training opportunity in the world for women in federal employment. The training program will include training tracks to better train employees in the following subjects: executive leadership, science and technology, project management, human resources, and more. In addition, the Office of Personnel Management, OPM, EEOC, and many more agencies will be on hand, so networking opportunities will be endless. Meet other government employees at all grade levels and ranks from across the nation. The 2012 NTP program Wheels of Change Keep on Moving, held in Detroit July 16 through 20, is for you. So for more details or to sign up, please call 202-898-0994 or visit few.org. That's FEW.org.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
This week on Agency of the Month, Kathy Hudson, Director of Human Resources at the National Security Agency, said,
"We have a slogan in HR, which is, if you can keep an employee for 5 years, you can keep them for a career. But we, like the rest of the federal government, are watching all of our data and doing a lot of workforce planning, strategic workforce outlook and analysis of what are the trends that we're seeing."
Agency of the Month, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. in June. Sage Management is a leader in finding solutions to national security challenges within federal and state government. Being a small, veteran-owned business, the leaders at Sage Management understand the importance of offering professional, streamlined services quickly and effectively. Their mission is to apply sound business management practices, proven engineering solutions, and community expertise in all aspects of national security. To find out more about Sage Management and career opportunities, visit sage-mgt.net.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Doug Brashear, Mobile Practice Director and Senior Information Architect at Navigation Arts, talking a little mobile madness here, talking about apps versus websites, the classic debate, iOS versus Android. If you would like to pursue this subject, or if it's in the middle of winter and you're listening to this and want to learn more, you can go to navigationarts.com. They have a blog there. And I was at blog.navigationarts.com, and I saw the big dog, Leo Mullen, the president of the company. He put together a blog, didn't he?
Yes.
I was kind of fascinated. Most of the leaders, they're not going to try to do that. But I think it's a good way to look at different aspects. For example, there was a blog, and it talked about a content management system working with a website. I think it was talking about Drupal and so you can get a lot of details. You can find the information that Doug has about mobile And it's just, in fact, I'll be blogging about this at Armature. So if you want to read my blog, type in John Gilroy blog and you'll stumble on my blog sooner or later. It's pretty easy. Let's go back to this iOS versus Android. You know, there are certainly people who can argue that Android really is really dominating the market share. And look at how fast it's growing. And other people say, oh, no, Apple's really the way to go. I mean, what's a reasonable way to approach both of these?
I mean, it's tough. It sort of depends on who you're talking to and what their point of view is and what they want to do. I mean, I think if you're talking to, you know, the average person on the street, you know, there were sort of value propositions for both. I mean, the nice thing about, you know, some of the Android devices that were out there is that, you know, for years, they were the ones that, you know, for in some cases, you could get a better deal on from the your cell phone carrier. And before the iPhone was available on all the carriers, you know, and people had these great legacy plans where they'd locked in a great rate for years, you know, and the Android device was maybe the only one that was really available to them. You know, it's a great device. I mean, it's a very solid device. It does a lot of things really well. And so it was a pretty obvious choice for, I think, a lot of those people. Now with the iPhone, you know, on Sprint, on Verizon, you know, on AT&T, of course, I think maybe that decision was a little harder. And now Apple, at least on AT&T, you know, Apple has a number of different iPhone choices. You know, you could, for a while, you could go as far back as, you know, getting an iPhone 3GS for no money. And of course, you know, that's kind of the subsidized price. But, you know, now there are many more price points. I mean, I think the devices are great. The accessory ecosystem that exists for these things is awesome. I mean, that's true on the Android side as well, especially when it comes to wireless accessories. You know, you can walk into your house, you know, after unlocking your home from your device through a kind of a Verizon at home service, you know, as an example. You could walk into your house, start playing music wirelessly, start printing wirelessly. I mean, the only thing it doesn't do is make your dinner.
I have a lawyer friend who was famous for saying, it depends. I could say, you want to have lunch? It depends. Is it raining? It depends. Are the Redskins going to win? It depends. I think the answer is, well, iOS or Android? It depends. I
mean, absolutely.
It, what is the specific application and what to worry about? Years ago, I liked the flexibility of Microsoft Windows, which has got parallel to Android, and that a lot of applications can run. And I didn't want the limitation of Apple because I'd tie my hands. In the mobile world, having your hands tied, maybe not a bad thing. It kind of like keeps you on the tracks. It's like a railroad and it's a choo-choo train on the tracks and you're not varying off. And there's some reassurance to that.
I think what's really interesting is that there was this time, you know, a number of years ago when you know, a lot of different organizations or carriers were putting out what they called kind of the walled garden, you know, and this was, you know, a set of websites or web pages kind of deployed by a carrier or maybe created by different brands and such, and they were designed to look okay on a mobile device. You know, you didn't have to zoom in or zoom out, which back then in some cases was a lot more difficult if you could even do it at all. It was more that you were sort of seeing a whole web page, but you were only seeing, you know, a small part of it at any given time. It was sort of the analogy about being in the dark room with an elephant and everyone's touching a different part of it, but no one knows it's an elephant. You know, and then that idea of the walled garden got really sort of it got negative. You know, people didn't want the fact that people didn't want these, you know, digested sort of watered down services that people had made available to them. They wanted the real deal. They wanted the full enchilada. And so, and then you had devices come along where you can pinch and zoom, you know, you can access, you know, digest full web pages and kind of have the visual context that you need. And I think it's interesting because now we're coming around and we're seeing a lot of people say, I really want something that's tailored for my device. I want something that that looks great, that is easy to read.
Users are maturing in their use of smartphones.
Exactly. And the big thing is, though, that they wanted to do everything that the main website or the main application does. They just don't want it to be complex.
I've been reading this real carefully, all the different events involved with the mobile phones. And traditionally, most people in the world use a feature phone. Some people use smartphones. Mm-hmm. But now, increasingly, I see people describing it as a smartphone and not smartphone.
Yeah, or they use the highly derogatory dumb phone.
Yeah, it's like, no, wait, most of the people in the world, you know, there's more mobile devices than humans out there, and most of them have what I used to call feature phones, which mm-hmm. I guess is an old-fashioned terminology. Doug, there are people who are listening who are saying, what the heck is this HTML5, and what kind of impact is this going to have in the mobile world? Maybe give us some of your brilliance. Give us a quick nutshell answer of what HTML5 is and how it's going to impact my listeners.
I mean, the way I think about it is HTML5 is a far more capable, far more extensible version of the same, you know, markup standard we've been using for years to do everything we do online. You know, when you combine it with CSS3 and JavaScript and different JavaScript libraries, at least in mobile, it can give a really immersive experience. I mean, in some cases, I've seen mobile websites and tablet web experiences where the multi-touch interactivity and such was, you know, made it almost indistinguishable from a native app experience. You know, they can be highly enriching, you know, highly experiential. And, you know, when you start to think, well, if I develop these mobile web experiences, and maybe I pair that with a, you know, a responsive design strategy where, you know, essentially I'm designing a large screen website like that I'd see on my laptop or desktop, then kind of stepping it down and degrading it a bit for a tablet, maybe reshuffling the content, and then taking it one step further and reshuffling it further or optimizing it further for a smartphone screen. Essentially, you've now got the single code base that reacts to all these different screen sizes. You could even use the mobile web experience you create to in what's called a hybrid app, which is basically a mobile web experience that's then sort of packaged in a container of the native code for that operating system. So, for example, you would take HTML5 or HTML and CSS and JavaScript and kind of package it into this container of Objective-C, and then you can actually make these things available through the App Store. Just like an app you had coded in completely Objective-C for iOS. So, you know, it gives you a lot of different deployment capabilities, and people talk about this, you know, write once, run everywhere. And, you know, you can believe that to a certain extent. But I think for most of the things I could think of that a federal agency or a member organization or even a company would want to do servicing their customers and constituents and members via mobile, I think it would accommodate the vast majority of it.
Now, I've heard of a hybrid cloud. First time I've heard of a hybrid app. Maybe this would be a breakthrough, a hybrid app. If you are listening to the show and you want to pursue this further, Network World's got a whole debate, and it is on page 20 of the May 21st issue, or you can Google iOS versus Android in the enterprise and look at the positives and negatives of both sides of it. You know, Android says, well, look, Java is a mature language. And other people are saying, well, you know, there's some problems based with Java, and the other languages is more interesting. I guess we'll have to just wait and see how things play out over the long term. Where do you see an application for a hybrid app? Give me a good application.
Oh, goodness. I mean, I would say that's a pretty tough answer to give, because it's almost certain that you've used a hybrid app before. You know, a lot of the apps exist in the App Store are hybrid apps, even apps that Apple has promoted or featured in its App Store are hybrid apps. I mean, the experience can be so immersive, can be so interactive, can be highly polished that you probably don't...
Is it live or is it tape?
I remember
that commercial
from
5 years
ago. Exactly. So, you know, it's almost certain that you've used one. I've seen examples where you might view someone's mobile website, and then if you download their app and it's a pretty similar experience, you know, odds are they are essentially redeploying that mobile web code through the App Store.
Increasingly, that's how people are using search, how they're using the internet is a mobile device and going to websites that way. In the marketing world, that's important. I think it's increasingly becoming more and more important in the federal world. We got to take a quick break. We're going to come back, talk more about Twitter feeds. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Doug Brashear, Mobile Practice Director and Senior Information Architect at Navigation Arts.
Here's Dave Mihelsik, Chief Technology Officer, DISA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by Brocade.
We'll be looking at strategies that allow us to have near local active-active replication of data and then geographically diverse continuity of operation replication so that we can provide the user the best of both worlds, instantaneous access to the data as well as guaranteed long-term access.
To listen to the entire program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Meet the future head on. Be a part of a unique forum that will help you address your most critical data center networking challenges. Attend Brocade Federal Forum 2012 to learn how the latest IT advances can transform your data center into a strategic, powerful tool. Join other federal and industry experts August 21st and 22nd at the Ronald Reagan Building for this informative conference. Register today at brocadefederalforum.com. That's brocadefederalforum.com.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report provided by Raytheon.
The Royal United Services Institute, also known as RUSI, held its annual Missile Defense Conference in London May 30th through the 31st. The conference was the first opportunity following the Chicago Summit for NATO senior policymakers to publicly discuss the next steps towards maturing Europe's ballistic missile defense shield. Discussions continue around the European nations sharing a pool of SM-3 interceptors.
5 million hours of experience, 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now, Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Pooling together really rewards. Van pools have now been added to the popular Pool Rewards program. If you currently drive alone to work and can carpool at least 2 days a week or form a new van pool, you may qualify for a cash incentive or reduced commuting costs. Visit commuterconnections.org. Click on Pool Rewards to find out more. Need to find others to rideshare with? Commuter Connections provides free ride matching services too. Pool Rewards. It pays to rideshare. Some restrictions apply. Visit commuterconnections.org today to get started.
Arming your home with a security system gives you peace of mind. Now get peace of mind for your wallet. Ackerman Security will monitor your system for $18.95 a month.
I was paying too much for monitoring, so I made the switch to Ackerman Security's Certified Monitoring Center. Now I'm paying only $18.95 a month with no cost to switch.
Call today and get 2 months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
What is the strategic direction for the United States Coast Guard? How will steadying the service make the U.S. Coast Guard ready for today and prepared for tomorrow? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and many others with Admiral Robert Papp, Commandant of the United States Coast Guard. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Doug Brashear, Mobile Practice Director and Senior Information Architect at Navigation Arts. You can go to navigationarts.com, read blogs, get information. It's got a great front page because it's it almost involves, it's like jumping into water or something, isn't it? I mean, it's just, it's moving. It's kind of interesting. If you want to pursue this, you can go to blogs. You can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. You can follow Doug. Doug, what is your Twitter handle?
It's Diesel Doug, but
Diesel Doug, huh?
Doug spelled with a U, just a U.
D-I-E-S-E-L-D-U-G.
Yep.
My, that's interesting. And, of course, Navigation Arts is at Navigation Arts if you want to follow along. This is a part of the show where people are listening going, well, I don't know if Doug is really a nerd or not. Maybe he's a nerd wannabe, and maybe he doesn't, you know, even know any about operating systems, or, you know, maybe he's making this up. So I have a 10-question test where we're going to resolve and find exactly what degree of nerdiness you have. First question. Year you bought your first computer.
So the last time I was here, I told when my parents bought their first computer, but I realized that my first computer was a Commodore VIC-20 that we bought in 1982.
82?
Yeah.
You were in grade school or something?
Yeah, most certainly.
Wow, my goodness. Year your first cell phone?
1995.
95, that's respectable. You do have a Twitter feed?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have your own blog?
No, I don't have my own blog.
Do you have an online personal backup service?
I do. I use Dropbox pretty religiously.
Flavor smartphone?
It's an iPhone 4S, so
what a
iOS.
Surprise. Number of apps?
366 as of last night.
366? That's a new record.
See, a lot of that's, you know, for my clients, you know, whenever we're doing competitive analyses or what have you, I sort of follow the different apps that are in that industry or workspace. And, you know, one of the really valuable things there is every time an app update is pushed out, you know, I get to see how our competitors are sort of changing and evolving their solutions. So it's really valuable.
Kind of tablet device.
It's an iPad.
iPad. Social networking sites you participate in?
Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, and I've been doing some stuff on Quora lately.
Last book read, electronic or paper?
It was electronic.
You're getting some good nerd points here. Very, very good, you know. I'm surprised you didn't know the serial number on that VIC-20 from 30 years ago.
Yep.
My goodness, that's a pretty good ranking.
Thanks for reminding me of that, by the way.
Thanks for reminding me that I'm really old and decrepit. You know, if you ask people about operating systems, you'll find out that, you know, I don't know, it's 50-50 split right now. Some people say Apple, some people say Android for the operating system. What in the world happened to RIM? What happened to BlackBerry? And what about Microsoft? I see Microsoft getting, believe it or not, popular in China. Some of the mobile operating systems, who would have thunk that?
Yep.
So what do you see this horse race here?
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I feel like, you know, one of the main reasons why we saw Google kind of skyrocket initially was because, you know, they were basically giving the operating system away to anyone who wanted to develop a device around it. And they were able to flood the market pretty quickly with a lot of very capable devices on carriers that did not carry the iPhone. So people who wanted to maintain those great plans that they had, you know, their only choice might have been an Android or that Windows mobile phone that they'd had, you know, for years, or a BlackBerry. You're absolutely right. RIM is completely in trouble. You know, I think the loss of some really key executives or some longtime executives lately, basically, I mean, they're pulling the goalie, you know, if I can use a hockey analogy.
Well, they're from Canada, so you can use hockey.
Exactly. So, I mean, they're pulling the goalie. It's the last 2 minutes of the game. And, I mean, my personal opinion is that, you know, within 3 years, we won't be talking about them anymore. They will have gone the way of Palm. You know, if you remember Palm, they had some really innovative ideas, but then HP bought them and really haven't done anything major with those patents. And, you know, now they're being very easily forgotten, which is kind of the thing you never want your innovation to do.
You know, my kids think of Palm as a what? You know, it's interesting that, you know, maybe people in their 30s at least would recognize Palm, but the younger generation, Palm, that doesn't click at all. It doesn't make any connections.
I mean, I can literally remember the day, you know, in like 96 where, you know, a friend was showing me, you know, their Palm Pilot. And, you know, if you think, you know, Palm really had one of the first connected devices.
It worked real well.
Yep.
I can't really, there's not bad things to say about it. They just kind of let it wither.
Yep.
Incredible.
So we won't have to worry about RIM for a while. And from the standpoint of someone who has to who designs these interfaces or helps teams to develop these interfaces, you know, supporting BlackBerry can actually be, you know, can actually involve a lot of effort. You know, we talk about kind of the device fragmentation or capabilities or OS fragmentation in Android. I mean, if you think about how long BlackBerry devices have been around, there's a lot of years of devices and a lot of legacy, you know, operating systems that you either have to decide whether you're going to support or not. You know, at Navigation Arts, we tend to say that, you know, for BlackBerry, we're not necessarily going to support anything that's before OS 6.
Interesting. looking at the future of the mobile marketplace, I mean, this is so hard. I mean, 5-6 years ago, we joke about your title here, you know, mobile practice director, that didn't exist. So what is going to exist 5 years from now? Is it going to be director of augmented reality? I mean, is the Department of Commerce going to have a director of augmented reality? What is going to happen to this world?
I would have never even anticipated that title would exist.
Think about that title.
But now that you say it, it's completely plausible. Because if you think about where we were 5 years ago, just in January of 2007, we saw the very first iPhone. And before that, we were sort of dealing with, you know, very low smartphone adoption. You know, we had devices like old Windows mobile devices and BlackBerry, and Palm was...
Remember Wince? W-I-N-C-E, Wince.
I had some of the first Windows CE device. I used to be sort of the Windows CE sort of cheerleader in our office.
The Mac people love calling it Wince.
Oh, gosh. And people would come around with these iPhones, and I would just say, no, I'm not ready because it doesn't do everything I want it to do yet. And there are still some things that... you know, it doesn't do. For example, you know, one day I had one of the very first Windows Mobile compatible navigation systems running on my device. I had my Bluetooth GPS unit, because my phone didn't have a GPS chip. So I had the Bluetooth GPS unit in the pocket of my motorcycle glove. I had my Bluetooth earpiece in, and all the directions were being routed to my earpiece. And I got to this place that I needed to get to without ever having to look at a map. I still haven't been able to do that on iOS, really, but that's about the only thing I haven't been able to do with my iPhone.
You know, I hit the tipping point when I was at a Christmas party, and a bunch of 25-year-old people I work with, and they were showing pictures of the babies, and there was their iPhone. Yeah. And so it wasn't even used for communication. It was used to show pictures of the kids. And then I saw everyone showing pictures of their kids and baby pictures, and I said, this is it. This is the tipping point. Now this is the transition. Got nothing to do with calling moms. Got nothing to do with calling for a pizza. It's got everything to do with a unified device that makes life easy. And I think people just have to think of it that way.
I mean, that's what it is. It's essentially the best example of kind of what the Swiss Army knife is sort of stereotypically known for. It's the electronic Swiss Army knife.
And you talked about that application with Bluetooth and everything else. Swiss Army knife is not good for everything. It's not good for cutting grapefruit.
Exactly.
A lot of stuff you can't do with it, but boy, my wife carries one around in her purse in case, and I saved my life many times because just some small little tool you might have to have.
But I want to get back to your 5-year, you know, where do I see this in 5 years? Because, you know, so 5 years is an enormously long time to look out in mobile. I mean, I tend to tell our clients that you really can't accurately foresee the future in mobile beyond a year and a half. And if you're signing contracts, for example, for services or what have you, you know, beyond a year and a half, you're taking a real risk. You're basically saying you feel confident enough that the industry is going to go in a particular direction that the cost savings of signing a longer term contract is worth it for you. You know, I think that in 5 years, you know, okay, here are my predictions. I think essentially we're going to be much more connected to everything that's around us. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and I heard the chief creative officer from Frog Design, you know, a really well-known design firm, basically talking about how, you know, we essentially have two brains. We have this brain that's in our heads, and then we have this kind of collective shared brain that comes from everyone around us.
The Borg.
Exactly. And you know, they're always sharing information and everything, and kind of the sharing of data from sensors and other things in the environment. I mean, I think we'll be much more connected to all of this, you know, to the point that we may not have to think quite as much about the more mundane things, like, you know, when we have to go out and get toilet paper. Maybe when it detects that you've sort of followed your usage pattern and you've used all the toilet paper, or you should have used all your toilet paper, you'll just open your door the next day and there's a delivery from Amazon of toilet paper.
I don't know if I'd go to that, but who knows what my kid's going to wind up doing, you know? They'll have to pay for that service of all the silly things to worry about. I know that resistance is futile as far as the technology goes, and you can resist as much as you want. It's not going to happen.
I mean, I think your thought about director of augmented reality or something, that's not far off. I mean, I think we've seen years and years of development of heads-up displays or kind of, you know, sort of the stranger than fiction, you know, heads-up display that's constantly giving you data.
We'll have to take a break here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Ending the interview here with Doug Beshear, Mobile Practice Director and Senior Information Architect at Navigation Arts. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
You've You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.